Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. A report from the Oregon Justice Resource Center finds that the Oregon Department of Corrections is an agency in crisis. My guest on today's show is Justin Lowe, OJRC Investigative Research Associate and author of its new report entitled ODOC, Agency in Crisis. Part one of our interview aired a few weeks ago. On this week's show, we're going to hear part two. For the benefit of new listeners and to refresh the memories of loyal listeners, I'll read you this from the report's introduction. From March 1st, 2020 to March 30th, 2022, the Oregon Department of Corrections, or ODOC, the people in its custody, and or the treatment of those individuals were mentioned at least 436 times in local, statewide, national, and international news articles. While state agencies frequently making headlines during this period was not necessarily uncommon due to pandemic-related news, guidelines, and services provided, ODOC stood out for the unprecedented number of times it had been mentioned in those 25 months. Many of those articles highlighted glaring and reoccurring issues within the ODOC staff, culture, and daily operations related to the abject treatment of adults in custody, or AICs, and other agency staff. These abuses include violations of constitutional rights, deprivation of basic needs, sexual violence, negligent medical care, physical and mental harm, and a generalized disregard for human life and well-being. While these issues were extensively documented and reported on during the pandemic, they are neither new nor uncommon. These issues existed well before 2020 and were exacerbated by the agency's inhumanity, incompetence, and inability to prepare for foreseeable crises. Hence, it is abundantly clear that these are interconnected issues related to chronic systemic problems within the agency, department administration, and state leadership, rather than individual incidents occurring within a vacuum. Furthermore, all of this has occurred with little to no repercussions relative to other state agencies. Now, in part one of this interview, we discussed the five issues that OJRC identified. Now, today on part two, we discuss some solutions. So let's move to focus on some solutions, because this throws a ray of sunshine here. Let's go look at some solutions. You've divided them into three: the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. Let's start with the executive. What's a corrections ombudsman?
Well, that's a really great question, and one that I had to Google myself when I first found out about it. But essentially, the corrections ombudsman is a position that was created by the Oregon State Legislature. And it was established in 1977. It was passed through Oregon State Legislature through law and funded all the way throughout the early 90s when the last corrections ombudsperson held that position. And it is a position within the executive branch. So underneath the governor's cabinet or collection of other directors and executive leaders. And they have the ability to act as an independent office whose job is to investigate and audit the Department of Corrections. And they can do so through subpoenaing documents from the Department of Corrections, investigating individuals or the agency as a whole in regards to the actions that they have either implemented or the policies that they operate under. They have the ability to scrutinize ODOC's operations, each individual facility if they wanted to, as well as the budget. They can report these findings to the legislature or directly to the governor, and they even have the statutory ability, so this is codified for them, to sue the Department of Corrections in the Marion County Circuit Court if they find it necessary.
And we haven't had one since the 1990s.
That is correct. Based on our research, it doesn't seem like the position has been held since the tough on crime era of the mid 90s. And so the position has just gone vacant. No funding has been available for it until this past February, when legislators went ahead and passed the governor's recommended budget for this position to fund the office again. And so now we are in a waiting period where we hope that this governor, and hopefully they're not going to wait until the next governor in 2023, but we're hoping that this position gets filled, because now they have the money for it, and that we can get some form of independent oversight that can hold this agency in crisis accountable, because that is the whole job of the Corrections Ombudsman, is to serve as a check and balance that has relatively wide latitude in doing so.
The power in a lame and a lame duck, as it were, last the governor will be leaving office at the end of this term. One would think one would be thinking about legacy at this point. Appointing someone to that position would certainly help, wouldn't it?
It would help. It would help, and it would be one step towards holding ODOC accountable and giving folks within ODOC's custody a chance.
Let's get down to the judicial branch solution. You have the Rights of Action and Temporary Assigned Judges program. What's this about?
Yes. So, and building these solutions with my supervisor, we both realized that there seems to be a pattern where all the branches of Oregon's state government tend to kick the can around in regards to oversight over the Department of Corrections, which is why we proposed three solutions and one for each branch, so that way we could give them a little bit of a roadmap towards some of the things that they can do instead of kicking the can around. And so with the judicial branch, this one has a little more like policy creativity, if you will, where there are currently only two avenues of redress for adults in custody to pursue when they experience harms or abuses during their time in the Department of Corrections. One of which is through the agency's administrative process, where you file a complaint, and who knows what that process is like. It's a black box in terms of filing a complaint directly to the Department of Corrections. And as we've discovered with some of our clients, getting a response from the department can take upwards to 60 days for an issue to be resolved. And the problem with that is during that time, the folks in custody are still experiencing the harms and abuses that they are filing a claim for and that they are wanting resolved. And so that is a completely inadequate path and solution for folks in custody, because they could be subjected to those harms for up to 2 months while they're waiting for a resolution. The second path is for them to pursue civil litigation through the federal courts, because that is the route that they have to pursue if they have any claims during their time in custody. And that in and of itself is also inaccessible and insufficient, because you're not guaranteed an attorney in that process because it's civil litigation. And on top of that, the federal courts move at a glacial pace. So the same issue as the agency administrative process, where all this time could pass while you're trying to litigate this issue, and you are still subject to the harms and abuses that you're hoping to fix. And so what this rights of action and temporary assigned judges program would do would be, first of all, the legislature would create some sort of statutory mechanism or some law where adults in custody can basically bring their claims to state courts, not federal courts, but state courts. And this could be for any harms, abuses, or civil rights or constitutional right violations that they experience. But as we've heard with the public defense crisis, and as we've seen post-pandemic with all these courts that are backlogged as they open up and try to litigate issues that have been on hold for the past 2 years, is that the speed of which the state courts move will still be inadequate to address these issues in a timely manner. And so what we found is that the Californian Supreme Court Chief Justice recently created what she called a temporary assigned judges program. And what that did was it brought retired judges back into the fold and gave them an opportunity to start working on preliminary hearing, conference, pre-trial matters that helped free up state court capacity and helped move along cases. So what this could look like in Oregon, and again, this would then be on the judiciary to figure out, would be to create a similar program where you could bring retired judges back into the fold and give them a docket that specifically addresses these grievances and these claims and these civil rights violations that adults in custody are experiencing. And the reason why, that, again, to circle back to why this is important, is because this would be a speedy and swift way to address these time-sensitive cases for people who, again, they are in custody, they cannot move anywhere else, they cannot escape these harms and these violations that they're experiencing. And so these are extremely time-sensitive in nature and crucial to be seen by judges, and it is important for these claims to be addressed in a very quick manner.
And now, let's go to my favorite branch of the my favorite branch in the people who, the ones who created a lot of the problem in the first place. My favorite branch, the legislative and the Senate Subcommittee on Corrections. You want to do a subcommittee?
Yes. So prior to my time as an investigative research associate, I actually worked in that beloved building down in Salem as a policy analyst and legislative aide. And during my time in Salem, and then afterwards when I read reports and did my own research through the legislative websites, I found that when subcommittees were created, and the example that I use are the civil law and I believe it was the equitable policing subcommittee within the House Judiciary, what we found was that when bills moved through those subcommittees, they were more likely to get passed than had they not gone through a subcommittee at all. And here's the reason why. Within the legislature, during any legislative session, there are specific deadlines that must be met in order for a bill to, quote unquote, stay alive and move through the building to eventually get what people expect it to get, which is a vote on the floor by all the state representatives and all the state senators. Well, if a bill does not meet specific deadlines in time, it basically dies. It stays in committee and it doesn't get picked up again throughout the rest of the legislative session. And some of those things that a bill must meet include receiving a public hearing where the bill can be publicly debated and receive public testimony from advocates and from voters who can also go in and publicly comment and give their thoughts and testimony, as well as a bill needs to receive a work session where it can receive any amendments and fixes before it leaves the committee and goes to the floor where it can be voted on. Now, House Judiciary and all the other House committees and Senate committees, they receive dozens, if not some of them might even exceed 100 bills and whatnot when they're in session. And there is just not enough time within the session for the legislators to read each bill, to put them up for a public hearing, and to also hold a work session for them. However, when there are subcommittees that, you know, pull some of the legislators from the main committee and pull some of the policy analysts and staffers from the main committee, we found that there are bills that are specific to that subcommittee that can be pushed through, that can be scheduled public hearings and work sessions because there is now the space and time carved out for it, that they can then keep up with the deadlines and the quick pace that the legislature moves through. And what we found in the 2021 legislative session, for example, was that there were 30 bills related to the Department of Corrections that were proposed. Of those 30 bills, only 11 passed. And of those 11, 9 were administrative or operations related. Those were bills that were always going to pass. It didn't change much in terms of reforming the Department of Corrections. One bill was its budget appropriations bill. And the last bill was to establish a task force on corrections medical care. So that one was actually, it was a good bill. It was something that changed a dynamic within Department of Corrections and hopefully can improve the lives of adults in custody. But for the other 19 bills that did not pass, did not even receive a public hearing or work session, that did not make it out the building, there were some really good bills in there. There were bills that would have prohibited most uses of deadly force against adults in custody, would have created an early medical release program for adults in custody to apply for, especially if they're on hospice care and have reason to be outside of the Department of Corrections custody. And there's also a bill that would have provided health services to adults in custody during pregnancy, labor, birth, and the postpartum period. There were all these bills that would have been transformative for folks who are in custody and would have improved reentry prospects, would have helped with rehabilitation and treatment, and also just keeping adults in custody safe and well, but they did not make it through. And so it is our hope that by developing a subcommittee on corrections where legislators will be forced to make the time to review these bills and to hold public hearings and to go through work sessions, that they can move some of these bills that got ignored and move them to the floor and actually open them up for debate and actually consider them instead of just drafting them and then letting them die in committee.
This is an interview with Justin Lowe, investigative research associate at the Oregon Justice Resource Center and author of a new report from the OJRC entitled ODOC, Agency in Crisis. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Honestly, it sounds like the legislature sounds like the biggest ask of the three. I mean, it's just because you're trying to get them to actually focus on something.
Right, getting them to focus and also getting them to care.
So look, what can people like me, you know, look at the public, what can we do?
That's a great question. And for starters, I would say, you know, if you have the opportunity and time to, please review this report, go through it and get an understanding of your state's prison agency and get an understanding, of the issues that happen within it and the harms that are done to folks in custody and also the folks who work for the Department of Corrections. Because I think that educating oneself on something that is relatively obscure for most of the general public is incredibly important as a place to start. And then, you know, we lay out three solutions here, but they can't just exist as written down solutions. They need to be advocated for, they need to be watched, and they need to be brought to the forefront of the folks who represent us and also the folks who are in other spaces like the executive branch and who work within the state agencies. My biggest hope from this is that the public and also stakeholders and lawmakers will read this report and finally see all these news articles that journalists and news outlets worked really hard to surface and to bring to light, and all the work that and the bravery of adults in custody to come forward and to share these stories that got reported on, to realize that these are all connected. I go to what I was talking about at the start of our interview, that these are systemic issues that reoccur and they happen over and over. And for folks in the general public who read that, I hope that they come away thinking that this isn't okay, and that this isn't the way that we should treat other people who, reminder, 95% of these folks are going to be reentering society at some point and rejoining us out here as our neighbors and as fellow Oregonians. And with that in mind, they should be treated with respect, compassion, and care. And so not only do I hope that readers who go through this report gain some sort of urgency to then advocate and reach out to their legislators, but I hope they also have conversations with one another about the ways that we treat folks in custody and our attitudes and our preconceptions that we have towards folks who make mistakes, because we make mistakes as well. Eventually I hope that we reach the point where we have a culture shift and that we go back to expecting the Department of Corrections to operate in a way that is restorative and rehabilitative, and eventually also even move to a place where that isn't necessary, where we're caring for our communities and we're focused on well-being within our communities instead of looking towards punitive measures and turning a blind eye to socioeconomic issues that are at the root of all these issues.
Indeed. So now, good a time as any to ask, how can people find out, where can people download that report, find out more about the and support the work that you and OJRC is doing, your website, social media, all that stuff?
Yeah, so the website for our organization is ojrc.info. So it's not .com, it's not .org, it's .info, I-N-F-O. And once you reach the Oregon Justice Resource Center website, you'll see on the top bar, there's a resources tab, and you can click on that tab and there'll be a link to all of the reports that our organization has produced. And the report that I recently published, Oregon Department of Corrections, Agency in Crisis, it'll be the first one on the list in the top left corner. And for folks who would also like to keep up to date with our Twitter feed, which is where we've also linked the article and also some commentary on the report and other topics that we've been advocating for, our Twitter handle is OJR Center. So that is OJR C E N T E R. OJR Center is where you can find us on Twitter.
Terrific. Once again, folks, we're speaking with Justin Lowe, the author of a new report from the Oregon Justice Resource Center entitled ODOC, Agency in Crisis. Justin, any closing thoughts for the listeners?
My closing thoughts would be is just to please read the report and feel the responsibility to hold the people who make these decisions accountable. You know, again, like in the solutions, contact your legislators and ask them if they will support creating a subcommittee on corrections. Reach out to the governor's office and get a bunch of postcards or letters sent to the governor's office advocating for the position of the corrections ombudsman to be filled, and for it to be filled by someone who will act independently and act in the interest of the folks who are in custody. Your power collectively can actually make an impact, especially when it is backed with this information and it is backed by the resolve to treat people better. And so I hope that this report can lead to some of those changes, and it's not going to happen alone.
Justin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Doug.
That was the second part of my conversation with Justin Lowe, investigative research associate with the Oregon Justice Resource Center and author of OJRC's new report entitled ODOC, Agency in Crisis. Find OJRC on the web at ojrc.info. Part one of this interview can be found in the Prison Pipeline archive at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Many thanks to my guest, Justin Lowe, and thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make all this possible. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
Sometimes I find myself alone, regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul's intentions. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.